land. We're investing it. We want to see it go from fallow ag field that was 95% invasives to, and it's beautiful up there, to, you know, they targeted wet prairie and a little bit of hydric pine, predominantly wet prairie and emergent marsh, thinking about wood storks and foraging habitat and what would benefit us down here in terms of our bringing our wood stork colony back to nesting at Corkscrew. I was a target with them.
What are some of the successes that you've seen through your management program in terms of being able to support or to revive plant species or animal species?
So, oh man, bobwhite quail come to mind actually. So we used to have more bobwhite quail, and every once in a while we'll get a call down here, and I'm like, and that's because we're burning more. So bobwhite quail really like having, they like having like pockets of denser vegetation, like saw palmetto, and then open areas, open grassy areas in between. And burned frequently because when they're burned frequently, producing more seed, and they eat seed insects. And so with the mitigation bank in particular, the original bank, when we started burning more frequently, start more coveys of quail up there. And we've actually started, when we've increased burning down here, periodically we get them. So long term, I think we'll start seeing more quail down here as well as we improve and continue to increase our fire frequency. I think the fact that we do see panther kittens here speaks well to our management and, is, in my mind, is a success. Again, I think that's tied to, in part, you know, quality of habitat. Yes, panthers do need, obviously, huge ranges. But the fact that we have a, you know, we had a female who we suspect actually denned, like, right by the center. That was where we were going to burn, where people go by. But the fact that we had that speaks to, like, okay, when they're young, she can't leave that den for an extended period of time. Well, why would she pick that spot in Corkscrew? Well, because she has the prey base and the prey close by. And so I think that speaks well and reflects well of our management practices as well. The wood storks, you know, we have a restoration program going on right now in the backcountry where we're actually going in with changes in hydrology and changes in fire regime. We've seen the encroachment of coastal plain willow, which is a native, or Carolina willow, which is a native. But when you get your system out of balance, natives can be invasive. So it's an invasive native, and it's really overtaking our marshes and our wet prairies in the backcountry. And so we've been doing a three-prong approach where you come in initially and peak of the dry season, we mechanically remove it. We mulch it and on spot. Then we do follow-up herbicide spot treatment as needed to keep any regrowth from coming back. Ideally, the water levels come up and they drown. Doesn't always happen that way. But we have that spot treatment as a safety net. And then you give it a few years, and then once you have enough pyrogenic species, you know, fire living species like your maiden canes, a lot of grasses, there's a lot of sedges actually, like sawgrass that likes to burn, then you get fire back in and you can use fire to maintain it. The changes in hydrology are in the loss of short hydroperiod wetlands in the region, especially with the core foraging area for a wood stork, with how far out would they fly, how far they'll fly out from the nest to forage. That's more habitat loss. And so we can only do so much. You know, the research team and the policy team looks at what we do here and try to influence how people do things outside of us. And so we're trying to bring our wood storks back. And hopefully, you know, over time with the restoration work that we're doing, we will eventually start to see wood storks foraging in areas where before forage wasn't available because of the willow. And I think that's an interesting story. And I hope that, you know, in 20 years, if somebody's doing an oral history again, that they're, you know, they're talking about then, and maybe I'm still here. Not quite. I'd be retirement age about then. But in 20 years, if I'm still here and you come back and I'm, you know, maybe I'm director of land management or something, and I'm like, it worked, you know, what we did really worked and wood storks are back. But, you know, a lot has to happen. They've lost their grocery stores. That's an analogy I use a lot. If you think about it, like, do you drive 20 miles to go to the grocery store, or do you go to the grocery store that's closest to you? Most of the time you go to the grocery store that's closest to you. And if you have, you know, 15 grocery stores around you and you go to this one grocery store and you really need sweet potatoes, but you can't get sweet potatoes, so you go to the next one, it doesn't take a lot of energy if they're close together. But the more spread out that those grocery stores, the more energy it takes, whether it be in the, you know, for humans and the, you look at gas costs, wear and tear on your vehicle, your time. Well, wood storks are having to take the same thing. It's just their energy is literally energy devoted to them and their health and energy devoted to their chicks. And so I like to say that we've lost their grocery stores. Their grocery stores are more spread out. They're not as full. Their prey base might not be the same. And we need to bring those grocery stores closer back in and have them be high quality, kind of a high quality areas for them to forage in, so to speak.